the stench. He'd only gotten one of his two requests. The good thing about the place was it was dead, but still a friendly territory. This meeting was too delicate for a Starbucks. I tapped my fingers over the table, chewing on my lower lip and looking around. Celian stared at me, bluntly, and instead of feeling awkward, I soaked it up, drinking his attention like fine wine. A part of me was embarrassed that Samson hadn't arrived yet. I knew Celian was impatient. This made me want to distract him. I tapped my side of the table 1,000 times. He looked under our table at my chucks. Orange.
Stimulation, sensation, and heat, he commented. Even you know I'm going to fuck you tonight.
I rolled my eyes. Can I ask you something?
You clearly just did. If this was 20 questions, you'd already have a disadvantage.
I pretended to examine my nails while giving him the finger. It made him chuckle, and his voice danced in the pit of my stomach. Are you sure about the love thing, Mom? Because if we miscalculated this, I'm in deep, deep trouble.
Go ahead, Humphrey.
What happened a year ago? Grayson said something happened that made you guys exile Couture to a different floor. I know it's around the same time you and your fiancé... He stiffened in his seat for a second, then relaxed, throwing an arm over the back of his chair.
My sister died.
My eyes met his across the table. I wanted to take his hand and comfort him, but he didn't look like he needed any comforting. He'd said it methodically, like he was reciting someone else's story.
She was Couture's editor-in-chief, was in charge of Gary and Ava.
Grayson, I corrected.
Whatever. After what happened, Matthias and I couldn't really look at them without remembering...
her, I finished for him. He nodded, taking a sip of his coffee and looking outside to the quiet side street. An older Asian woman crouched down to pet an even older dog. Its owner smiled at her petulantly, but kept texting with the hand that wasn't holding the leash. The world seemed so cold all of a sudden, and hugging Celian became a physical need, a necessity, rather than an act of affection.
It was my fault.
He cleared his throat, flipping his wrist to check his Rolex. I'd never seen him like this before, opening up while completely shutting down. His eyes were anywhere but on me, but the rest of his face was tense and strong. He didn't want to break. But something told me the version of him I knew was already beyond cracked. How? I whispered, trying to coax him with my eyes, which he couldn't even meet.
That's why everything is a complete clusterfuck, Judith. It was my fault. Suffice it to say, I killed her, much like I killed my parents' relationship. And then it's come to all this because my father finally decided he'd had enough and retaliated, stuck his cock in my fiancé's mouth 3 days after the funeral. Apparently all it took to bed my fiancé was a Parisian weekend and a broken fiancé who didn't want to fuck her because he was too depressed to scrape himself off of the bed that weekend.
I bit down on the curse that threatened to slip out of my mouth.
I broke off the engagement at first. Up until then, Lily and I had been a real couple. But then, I figured, part of why Matthias did that was because he was getting weaker. He'd had several heart attacks, and he knew he was going to pass the president's seat to me. He couldn't stomach the idea of me doing a better job than him, making more money. At the same time, my father has never been a newsman. He's just a businessman who got very lucky. He knew the merger between LBC and Newsflash Corps would make me an unstoppable force. So killing my engagement and shitting all over my career plans was the perfect two-birds-one-stone scenario for him. For that reason alone, I agreed to take Lily back, but in a very different capacity. Come August, we will get married, and I will inherit most of her family's business. First, technically, and then when her father steps down from his official duties, also officially. She will have nothing but a personal trainer to fuck and an empty existence to maintain, with one miserable thing going for her. She will be married to the asshole all her preppy Manhattan friends had wanted when we were growing up.
Tears shimmered in my eyes, and I didn't want to blink, knowing they would freefall the minute I let them. So this was why he was marrying Lily. To spite his dad. To spite himself. To take what he thought he deserved from a horrible situation. My crucial teenage years had come and gone without a mother. I'd almost resented her in a selfish, weird way, like she'd had a hand in not being alive anymore,
like she could have fought a little harder against her disease. But I'd never known how it would feel not to be wanted by my parents. They'd always loved me, and hard. They weren't rich or powerful or even mystifying in the way the Laurents were, but they'd made me feel so important. It always felt like it was us against the world. Even now, with Dad being sick, we had a bond that defied death, the type in which I felt treasured even by those who weren't alive. I grabbed Celion's hand and brought it to my face, kissing his palm like Phoenix had done to me, intimately, devastatingly, warmly. We were out in the open, and it was downright outrageous, but he didn't pull away. He stared at me, a little confused, his mouth parting. Some of the menace left his face, and that was worth the embarrassment of doing something I shouldn't have. What happened to your sister? How did she...
Judith Humphrey?
A pudgy man in a wrinkly mud-colored suit appeared in front of our table. Celion withdrew his hand from mine and straightened, standing to introduce both of us. We all sat down, and I wiped my eyes quickly. For the next 45 minutes, I watched Celion as he grilled the guy like he wasn't the one doing us a huge favor, but vice versa. I asked a lot of questions, too, but in the end, it was Celion who coaxed him to come speak on air. He was relentless, charming, and extremely convincing. Finn Sampson was worried for his job, and rightly so, but Celion spoke to his heart, reminding him of his morals and all the Holocaust-surviving pensioners who had lost so much money.
"Speaking up will not get you fired. If anything, it will get you a fat promotion. Anyone touches your position, we're going to make it such a shit show, the whole nation will back you up. Every network in New York will rally for you, and that's a fact. And a promise."
Celion handed him his business card. That was the scariest thing about my boss. He could talk you into donating your organs to science while you were still very much alive. He had the uncanny ability to make you want to please him, even though he didn't do anything to earn such devotion. When we left the deli, I was still disoriented from Celion's dazzling show of authority, and I kept my mouth shut, not wanting to rock the boat. I hadn't expected him to open up the way he had before Samson showed up, and I didn't want to push him for more. Celion Laurent was like a flower. To enjoy his full bloom, I needed to bide my time. I was also embarrassed for taking his hand and crying a second before we'd met an interviewee. So much for keeping it cool and professional. The cab ride was completely silent, and when we were about 2 blocks from LBC, the traffic got so bad Celion ordered the driver to pull to the curb and let us walk the rest of the way.
"Are you sure? Do I look like a person who is unsure of anything he does?" "Okay, man, okay."
Guess we'd be walking the rest of the way. Celion's eyes were set dead on the street ahead of us, and his face was murderous when he said,
"She was upset and ran straight into traffic. Got hit by a bus in front of my own eyes."
I coughed on a bitter lump of agony, choking back a sob I dared not release. "Oh my God, his sister, Camille." He stopped, so did I. People brushed past us, muttering profanity, the lights and faces blurring into nothing. All I could see was him.
"We'd had a fight."
"What were you fighting about?" Every single word I uttered was cocked and ready to create an explosion. I wasn't normally like this with Celion, but I wasn't scared of him. I was terrified for him. I hadn't known he harbored so much pain. We resumed our walk to the next traffic light. He stared at his huge hands.
"Camille was my baby sister. Talented as hell and seriously fucking beautiful, inside and out. You remind me of her in the way you're passionate about a story. Only she had the same feeling for fashion."
That curved my mouth in a smile. I believed him. Celion looked like a god among men. There was no reason to think Camille would be anything less than striking, not to mention ambitious and highly intelligent.
"Camille only had one problem, and that was her boyfriend."
"What? Why?" I asked. The light turned green, and he seemed in a hurry to get to the office. I had to practically jog to keep up with his pace.
"Because the bastard's name was Phoenix Townley."
I sucked in a breath. Phoenix represented a tragedy bigger than he could shoulder.
"Camille and Phoenix had a bit of an illicit affair at work. I didn't particularly like it,
Then again, I hardly gave a fuck about who she was fucking as long as she was safe. My father, on the other hand, lost his shit. Cam and Phoenix were young and volatile, not to mention they once did very unprofessional things against her office door that I will never be able to erase from my memory. And trust me, I've tried to forget those sounds.
He cringed visibly.
If there's one thing my father and I were in agreement about, and it's not a stretch when I say it was literally just one thing, it was that Camille and Phoenix weren't a good match. Phoenix was reckless as hell, and she was a good apple he wanted to take a bite from and throw in the trash. He was a damn good reporter, despite the fact that his daddy got him the position. But he also liked crack and whores, two things that didn't mix well with the fact that he was dating my baby sister.
Jesus Christ. Phoenix had done a lot of growing up during the time he was away. I knew that because there was no way the man I knew today was a drug addict.
I'm not even sure why the fuck I'm telling you this.
Sirion ran his hand through his hair, shaking his head exasperated.
But I'm halfway through, so I better finish. My father decided to send Phoenix off to the Middle East. You can never run out of action there. I tried to convince him not to play God, because that shit is dangerous. Doesn't matter what the cause is. Camille was livid. Even after Phoenix was gone and my father told her about the crack and the whores, trying to convince her to forget him. As he put it, Phoenix had clearly chosen his work over her, so there was nothing to lament. But she was lovesick. Or maybe she was just sick, but she loved Phoenix and Matthias didn't respect that.
We now stood in front of LBC's building, neither of us making a move to go inside. There was a finality about stepping back into the realm of the office, where we'd have to remain professional, that we didn't seem to want to face. My lower lip trembled, and I felt my nostrils moisten. I wanted to cry so badly, but I kept myself strong for him.
What did you tell her? I asked. What made her run into the street?
After he'd been gone a few months, she decided to go visit him. They'd been secretly talking and were going to meet in Istanbul. She sold it to Matthias as a business trip. She'd write a piece about the thriving fashion industry in Turkey. She told me she wanted to marry Phoenix, that she couldn't sleep or eat or shit without thinking about him. She'd lost so much weight. She said he'd been clean for a while, that they were going to give it another shot, that Matthias and I didn't know the whole story. In that moment, I felt so filthy about what my father had done that I decided to tell the truth. I told her Phoenix had never had any doubts about her, but that Matthias had kicked him out of her life, shipped him away, and I hadn't tried hard enough to stop him. Probably none of us could stop him.
But you didn't have a hand in doing it, I said softly. He shrugged one shoulder.
I couldn't stop Matthias. His hatred for the Townleys knows no bound. If you think I'm a hateful fucker, you've seen nothing yet.
Why is that?
Because Townley is actually loved and respected? Because his son didn't ruin his marriage? The fuck should I know? To me, they're just another champagne and caviar-eating family LBC needs to feed.
Celian bowed his head. His face was stoic, but his eyes bled pain. He looked like the warrior, shredded into ribbons and tough as steel.
The moment I confessed, she bolted, the hurt and rage I saw in her eyes. I ran after her when I saw her under the bus's wheels, dragged her out. At first I thought she was okay. There was no blood or anything. She died 8 hours later of internal bleeding. My father can't look me in the face anymore because I told her the truth. And I don't exactly blame him. If it wasn't for the other shit between us, I would actually understand.
Silence hung in the air. I wanted to hug him, but knew better than to try. So I did the next best thing, the thing my mom used to do whenever I cried, which wasn't that often. She'd kiss the tips of her fingers and press them against my heart. He scowled.
The fuck you doing, Brooklyn girl?
Kissing your pain away, I whispered, not wondering even for a second how he knew where I lived. Manhattan, Prince. He turned around and headed for the building silently, and I followed suit. The entire elevator ride upstairs, I thought about Phoenix. About what it must be like for Celian to see him around after what happened.
about the tattoo on Phoenix's forearm of the smiling girl, of Camille, and how he too was still dealing with the aftermath of her death, about how it must feel for Celion to spend time with his father here every day or even look at his fiancé's face. August. My mind reeled. He said they were getting married in August, less than 3 months away. The elevator dinged and we both rushed out. I didn't dare look at his face after all he'd shared, after how he'd opened up to me. Then it occurred to me that my boss didn't know anything about my personal life. Not about Dad, not about Mom, and certainly not about Milton. I arrived at my desk, sat back, and stared at nothing for half an hour. A message from Grayson in our company's chat room snapped me out of my reverie. Grayson, reminding you to call your insurance like you asked me to. Grayson, another friendly reminder, I'm not your PA. Grayson, Mr. Laurent, I know you're probably reading this, so let me just say I admire the suit you're in today, not that I'm checking you out, and not that you don't normally deliver in the fashion sense. How do you undo a message? God, if you can't send me an Abercrombie & Fitch model as a boyfriend, at least send me filters. Oh, yes. I'd told Grayson I had an insurance issue so I wouldn't forget. I'd lied. I took my phone out and dialed the collection agency to talk about different payment plans. Now that I had a real job, I needed to start working through our debt. I gave the representative on the other end of the line my name and details, then asked if she needed my credit card number. It was going to suck to see the money finally coming into my bank account just evaporating right back out. She snapped her gum in my ear, her voice lethargic. No need, ma'am. Says here the account's been settled. I blinked, staring at all the yellows and oranges and reds on my screen, not really deciphering her words. Excuse me? She sighed. Says here a payment has been made. You no longer owe us anything, ma'am. Anything else you need help with today? I raised my head and looked into the conference room, where Celion sat with Matthias and a bunch of guys in suits he referred to as bigwigs. They were probably discussing money issues and ratings. Those were the meetings the staff wasn't invited to. I'd once heard Matthias shouting at Celion that he was sheltering us from the bad stuff, and Celion had laughed and retorted, "As your son, let me assure you, you have a lot to learn about protecting what's yours. Take a fucking seat, old man." Celion was talking to one of the suits animatedly. Then he smiled his patronizing smile and patted the back of his hand like he was the most adorable idiot he'd ever had the displeasure of meeting. Could he? Did he? Matthias stared at him with a disdain that chilled my bones. All the other men and women in the room stared at him intently, listening to every word he said. No. Celion was too brutal, too callous to do something like this. Besides, how would he even know? Then, as if sensing my gaze, his face angled toward mine, and he shot me a look I couldn't decode. Anger? Annoyance? Desire? All three? Ma'am? Ma'am, is there anything else I can do for you today? I shook my head and got back to the woman on the phone. No, everything is perfectly clear. Thank you very much.
Chapter 10. Celion. Jude never got a follow-up on that sexathon invitation from this morning. After spilling my guts all over her orange chucks earlier in the afternoon, watching her eyes swim with emotions that had threatened to drown me into despair, I had decided it was in everyone's best interest if we took the night to reevaluate the clusterfuck known as our office fling. To say I wasn't the oversharing type would be the understatement of the millennium. Yet somehow, in that kosher deli that smelled like death and looked like clinical depression, I'd talked about Camille in a way I never had before. Not with Maman, and not with Kate. And certainly not with my sorry excuse for a fiancé or deadbeat father. I grabbed my coat and made my way out of my office after we finished the show. Judith was still typing away on her computer, paying her dues as a junior reporter. She actually had the audacity to look pissed again, for a reason beyond my grasp or care. Most women were content to simply spend time with me in any capacity. Yet Jude got to get fucked, have lunch dates, and have me pay for her fucking life. Granted, unbeknownst to her, and she still acted like I was public enemy number one. After a grueling ratings meeting with the bigwigs earlier today, I'd taken my father aside and explained to him again that if he ever touched Jude, I was going to unleash his dirty laundry, one stained panty at a time, and kill the pristine Laurent name he'd been writing all the way to the bank. Anyway, seeing as pussy wasn't in the cards for me tonight, I decided to settle for going face-to-face with a dick. I'd pay Phoenix fucking Townley a visit. Phoenix lived in Soho, which hardly surprised me. It was a great place to find any of your vices, from crack and dope to dead prostitutes. I located his new address in his HR file and took an Uber straight to his house. He opened the door on the third knock, wearing nothing but white briefs. His blonde curls fell on his forehead. His face flush with the humidity that knocked New York on its pale ass on the verge of every summer. He no longer looked like a kid, and it bothered me that he'd continued aging while Camille stayed frozen, and that Judith might see him in that light, as a man and not a bad-looking one at that. "So," he greeted me with no particular tone to his voice, like my presence on his doorstep was ordinary. He left the door open, turning around and ambling back to his couch in a silent invitation. The apartment was small, new, and hip. And yes, I died a little using the word hip, even if just in my mind. I strolled directly to the red-bricked, trendy kitchen with intentions of fixing myself a drink. But the cupboards were full of bullshit ramen noodles. I opened the fridge and found nothing but root beer, pink lemonade, and nylon wet cat food. Not a drop of alcohol in sight. Just because you're a pussy doesn't mean you need to eat like one. I slammed his fridge shut, groaning. "There's a stray under my building that I feed. Lost souls connect to one another in a quiet way. If you're looking for booze, hate to break it to you, but I quit." He free fell to his couch with a thud, slouching and flipping channels on his TV. Was he expecting a medal, a bright sticker, or maybe just for me to not punch him in the face? Phoenix settled on BBC America. I hated that he wasn't stupid. It made hating him more difficult. "Mouthwash?" I asked. "Nope." "Pot?" Everyone had fucking pot. Even my 57-year-old Eastern European housekeeper, who also had a crucifix the size of my bathroom dangling on her meaty neck. "Quit everything," he said. "The alcohol, the drugs, the whores." I cut in, swiveling around and cracking open a can of root beer. I took a sip, decided it tasted like rotten anus, and dumped it in his sink. Last time we'd had an actual conversation was when he'd tried to convince me to talk to my father about sending him packing to the Middle East. I'd said I'd try. And I sort of had, but in all honesty, I wasn't convinced he deserved my sister. Also, I had no power over my father, especially when it came to Cam. He'd barely let me hang out with my own sister when we were kids, deeming me the troublemaker and her his princess. The time we'd seen each other before that, Phoenix and I hadn't really done much talking. I saw Camille upset after the entire doped whore incident and had decided to rearrange the attributes of his face. A broken nose and three cuts in his eyebrows later, Phoenix had a pretty clear idea of my feelings toward him. Consequently, he knew this was not a social call. He shook his head, staring at the ceiling, his hands tucked under his head. "I never touched the prostitute. We scored some drugs together, yeah, but she was half naked because she was an idiot and tried to seduce me. I never cheated on your sister. I was a fucked up boyfriend, sure, but I never wronged her." I'm sensing I should somehow be impressed by this revelation. I yanked his fridge open again, this time trying the sugar-free organic pink lemonade. Spat it out. Maybe sober life is punishment enough for Townley Jr. Not everything is a battle of words and power, Sal. He was the only person to call me that, and I'd never understood why. We weren't close before or after he'd dated Camille. "You know, I tried to call you several times after she died," he told me. "I couldn't stop going over the last thing I said to her, the last thing she said to me, when we were about to meet in Turkey." I rubbed my jaw, moving it from side to side. I'd come here to warn him that my stay the fuck away from Judith warning for Matthias extended to him, but somehow we were now talking about Camille. It was the second time today I'd had to share her memory with someone else. Not to be a sappy shit, but I really did miss my sister every single minute. She was the only thing that had resembled normal in my family. With Cam, things had been simple. I loved her and she'd loved me. I'd had her back and she'd had mine. Matthias had fucked up and I'd failed her, and then I'd chosen to tell her the truth when she was standing on the edge of the fucking street like an idiot. Say it, I spat. I wanted to have that piece of Cam, too, a new piece that would make her feel alive, even if just for a second. Phoenix sat forward on the couch, his elbows propped on his knees. He clutched his head, staring down at the floor. I told her I was clean, that I'd changed, and that I was crazy about her ass. She believed me. We talked about Istanbul, and she said she was going to wait for me until I came back from the Middle East, no matter when it was. Do you know what I said to her after that? He looked up to me, his eyes shimmering. I shook my head. I understood love as a concept, but every time people started talking like Phoenix, I automatically assumed they were reciting a Sarah Jessica Parker movie. It didn't seem real. I told her I'd never wanted to give her up, that what we had wasn't simple, but it was real. That I needed her. That I didn't know if we could work it out, but I would damn well try my best. He looked up at me. I knew your dad had a bounty on my head, but I didn't care. I filled in the rest in my head. And then Camille had talked to me and found out why Phoenix really left. That they were Romeo and Juliet. That they stood no chance because their families, my family, would never let them be together. He reached out to me and I froze. If hugging it out was his way of getting over his feud, he was obviously still doing drugs. Then I looked down and noticed the tattoo. Camille laughing back at me, a familiar smile with too much teeth and the eye wrinkles that upset her every time she looked into a magnifying mirror, but I thought only made her prettier. Why did you come here, Sel? I can't bring her back and you don't want to patch things up between us. He wiped his nose on his bare bicep. I didn't come here for Camille. I came here because if I find you going anywhere near Judith Humphrey, I will bash your head against the first available surface and get rid of the evidence in a way that would make it impossible to find you. I knew what I'd just said could bite me so hard in the ass, I would have nowhere left to shit from. Still, I couldn't help myself. Phoenix stood, walking over to his open-plan kitchen, and poured himself some of the nasty lemonade. That's for Jude to decide. Had she told him about her father, about her debt, about her life? I inspected him with a frown as he swiveled to face me and continued. Jude is building a network of friends at work. I'm glad to be one of them. You, the Laurents, hold so much power that you sometimes forget you're not real monarchs. People, your employees, are not your servants. Look at what happened to your father. He's done everything he could to try to control me and his staff and even you. Where is he now? After multiple heart attacks, he's professionally irrelevant. You're the one calling the shots at LBC, and your mother, his divorcee, is the one controlling the board. He has nothing left. To maintain power, you have to distribute it, too. I won't let the Laurents dictate my relationships with people anymore. He added after a moment. Just look at the state of your family. You hardly know what you're doing. He wasn't wrong. Regardless of Lily, I knew very well that I had nothing to offer Jude. I didn't do love. I sucked hard at relationships and harder at feelings. She deserved a lot more than me, something I would never admit out loud, but knew very well deep down. A decent man would take a step back and give her a chance to meet someone who could be there for her. I wasn't a decent man, though. Not to Judith, and definitely not to Phoenix. In one move, I cornered him against his fridge, clamping my hand over his neck and squeezing until my knuckles whitened. My face was relaxed, my pulse steady. But the way Phoenix's eyes bulged told me I looked the way I felt, lethal and beyond repair. I never used physical violence to get places. In fact, the last time I'd had my hands on someone, it was him because of Cam. But Phoenix really needed to know Jude was off limits. I will say this again, Townley. And this time, pay careful attention, because I wouldn't mind throwing both you and your father's ass out on the street. You messed things up with my sister, and you do not get a second chance with my employee. You want to sit in Judith's friend zone, you're welcome to rot there. But if you so much as touch one of her blonde locks, brush your hand over her skin, it's game over for you. And I'm not the king. I let go of his neck, and he gasped, crouching down and gripping his throat. I'm the goddamn god in this place. Fair warning. You've already proven to be a sinner, and no amount of Hail Marys is going to wipe clean the debt you have with me. I dashed out of his apartment, thinking tonight couldn't possibly get much worse. But of course, I was wrong. Because Lily was waiting for me at my apartment building, ready to prove it. Lily had lost her key privileges the day I caught her with my father's dick in her mouth. Not an overreaction on my part, I think everyone would agree. That was also the day I'd broken off our engagement, and even when she came crawling back, dangling Newsflash Corp in my face, I'd never bothered to return the spare key. Since my building employed enough security and receptionists to open a mall, Lily couldn't waltz in and wait at my door. The staff knew people who came to visit regularly. Maman, Kate, and Elijah, a producer and fellow Yankees fan from work. For Lily, my instructions were clear and simple. If I wasn't around, she was to wait in the lobby, which was why I found her coiled around a glass of champagne, wrapped in a black satin mini-dress, and flipping through a magazine at the golden marble bar in my building's lounge. The minute I walked through the skyscraper's revolving door, she shot to her feet and flung herself at me. Seeing as we hadn't spoken since she'd left the gala without me last weekend, I was mildly surprised to see we were still on friendly terms. My surprise was not warranted, I discovered, when Lily stopped a few inches from me and raised her hand to slap me across the face. I stopped her, grabbing her wrist and lowering her arm. "Lily?" I said through gritted teeth.
"Fiancé?"
She spat out the word.
"We need to talk."
"Talking doesn't require you to touch me. I'm surprised you haven't figured that out. You spend most of your days gossiping with your friends like it's an Olympic sport." She pouted in defeat, then wiped strands of her hair from her face. I headed to the elevator, not really giving a shit if she followed. She did. In the elevator, she turned around and tried to rub her crotch against my thigh. I took a step back, tisking. "You lost your cock rights long ago."
"Fuck you, Celian. In your dreams.
And even there, only from behind so I don't have to look at your face." I smiled politely, checking my Rolex. There was nowhere in particular I needed to be, but I decided to give her exactly 10 minutes to tell me what the fuck she was doing here. What can I say? I was feeling generous. When we got to my apartment, I finally fixed myself that long-awaited drink while Lily paced back and forth in my living room. Everything was made out of sleek black granite and oak paneling, with sterile-looking minimal white furniture. The Japanese interior designer who'd come here had asked what I wanted to convey when I moved in. I'd told her nothing. She thought I was being literal. Now my apartment looks exactly like my heart. Hollow. I'd been living here for the past 3 years and had only fucked one woman in this place. It was Lily, and it had been over a year since that happened. Other than that, I mostly used my place for sleep. "Talk," I ordered. And the minute I did, Lily's mouth opened and the words flew from it like she'd been waiting for my permission for years.
"Look, I get it, okay? I screwed up, Celian. Do you think I don't know that? Do you think I don't understand the gravity of my mistake, of messing with your dad while you were grieving your sister?"
Camille and Lily were the same age, 3 years my junior, which made her 29, and had attended the same private schools in Manhattan. They weren't friends, barely acquaintances. My sister wrote journals, went to poetry nights, and was obsessed with autobiographies about high-end fashion designers, while Lily was focused on partying, boys, and diets. They had nothing in common, and even though Camille had never said it in so many words, I knew that before I came into the picture. Lily had been harassing her to set us up, when she wasn't mini-bullying her in the high school halls for her goody-two-shoes ways. So Lily mentioning my sister dampened my already pissy mood.
"But trust me when I say it didn't come out of left field, Celian. Even when we were a functioning couple, you looked at me, but never really saw me. You merely let me crawl into your bed and attended my family functions so you could get ahead with your merger plan. I wanted to get your attention at any cost. It was stupid, I know. And I regret it. But this has gone too far now. I want you back. I want us back."
"I want a Ferrari and a month-long vacation in the Caribbean." And Judith's mouth around my cock. Lily flung her arms in the air.
"You could get all of those things. So why can't I get you? I will be good, faithful. We've been together for so many years, Celian. Don't let this ruin us."
"No."
"I'll let you keep your side pieces. I know they're nothing but sex. I don't mind. I'm willing to share."
Still a no. I placed my glass on the metallic minibar, and when I turned around, I found her undressing like her satin number was on fire. The heap of fabric fell to the floor and she tried to wrap her leg around my waist, losing her balance when I took a step back. She reached to grab my hand for balance and fell flat on her ass. I looked down at her, noticing that she hadn't worn a bra or panties under her dress. I picked up her clothing and threw it at her. "Get out."
"I want to get pregnant."
There are plenty of men who will be willing to fuck you. I can call you an Uber to the nearest bar. Try not to catch an STD while you're at it. It's touch and go when you don't use protection.
You're my future husband. I want you to get me pregnant.
She was still sitting on the floor, her thighs spread, her pussy staring at me. And I was morbidly bored by this act. Lily had done this every few months since we'd announced our engagement was back on. Normally I ignored her. But tonight, after a disastrous meeting with the bigwigs, a weird encounter with Jude, and talking to Phoenix fucking Townley, I wanted to minimize my contact with her crazy ass. Put your clothes on, I repeated verbally, swiveling to get another drink. My back was to her as I poured scotch into a crystal glass and stared down at the liquid. Thin arms wrapped around my torso, and Lily's body made a second appearance, draping around me like an octopus. How many limbs did this woman have? I shook her off again. Have you lost your mind? I turned around, pushing her away. I'd been candid with her from the beginning when I'd agreed to take her back. The chances of us being intimate again weren't much better than me spontaneously joining the circus. If she wanted kids, she was welcome to have them with someone else. If she wanted sex, she was welcome to fuck around. If she wanted both, she could move one of her one-night stands into the three-story refurbished house her father had purchased for us ahead of the wedding, because I sure as hell wasn't going to be found anywhere near it.
Don't pretend like you're immune to sex, Celion. That's what we do. We're a mess, but we're a hot mess.
She slid down to her knees and started fumbling with my zipper. I stared at her in disbelief, swatting her hand away like she was a nagging fly. Someone here was a hot mess, but it sure as hell wasn't me. Are you drunk? I asked, point blank.
Drunk enough that you can't kick me out of here?
She sneered, licking her red-glossed lips. She underestimated my dislike for her, because 20 minutes later she was already tucked inside a cab, me sitting beside her and staring out the window.
You can't take me to my apartment. There's no way to tell what I'll do to myself. I'm depressed. My fiancé doesn't want to touch me.
She wailed, sniffling and puffing her hair in the rearview mirror. Our driver, a young Indian man in a Manchester United shirt, rubbed his face with his hand, shaking his head. He had a picture of a woman, his wife, I assumed, and two small boys dangling from a keychain on the rearview mirror. They were all smiling, wearing cricket gear. I wondered if he wanted my Rolex and $3,000 suit like I wanted his normalcy and family life, and if that shit mattered at all. I'm not taking you to your apartment, I'm taking you to your parents. I didn't believe for one second that Lily would hurt herself. This chick would cold-bloodedly kill a puppy before letting someone who wasn't a professional cut her bangs. But I wasn't one to take chances either. If she was feeling suicidal, her parents could take care of it. I'd been a very doting boyfriend while she went through her dramatic phases, prior to the moment she decided to give head to the man who'd created me. Lily kicked her feet against the driver's seat. He winced.
Ugh, I don't want to go there,
she hiccuped. So fucking drunk.
It's depressing. My mother cries all the time and my grandmother looks like a mess. Besides, my sisters are bitches.
Her sisters, Scarlett and Grace, were a nurse and a physical therapist, both decent women who'd opted out of the media life. Unfortunately for Lily, they frowned upon the lifestyle she led, in which her only contribution to society was having a fine ass and tipping service providers well. She was the only person in her family who didn't hold a job. Lily claimed there was no need. She was busy planning a wedding, a bachelorette party, and a honeymoon. I wasn't entirely sure who she was going to take the honeymoon with, but we both knew I'd board a spaceship with a one-way ticket to the sun before getting on a plane with her. At least I hoped we did. Your sisters don't live at home, and what do you mean your mother is crying? Is Madeline okay? Lily tucked her chin and fiddled with her fingers. She looked guilty, and that worried me, because this girl had the moral compass of a human trafficking pimp. Lily, my fiancé shot the driver a dirty look through the rearview mirror, asking him not to judge her without realizing she was 10 minutes too late.
Scar and Gracie moved in 2 weeks ago because Grams is not feeling very well.
I dropped my arm to my side. What do you fucking mean, not feeling well? The one thing I always loved about Lily was her family. Hell, I'd started dating her solely for the fact that her grandmother was always there, with a homemade pie and crazy stories about the Guys and Dolls era of New York. My entire senior year had been spent stuffing my face with Madeline's cherry pie and listening to Broadway gossip from the 50s, then stuffing my face with Lily's pussy and hearing her moan my name like a prayer. Up until a year ago, I'd taken Madeline out to Broadway every other month. We'd watch a show, go to a small Italian place, and talk about the news. Her late husband had incorporated Newsflash Corp. It made me a first-class asshole that I'd cut the tradition short when Lily and I broke up. Even after we were back together with our new arrangement, I couldn't face Madeline, knowing I lived a lie, one in which I fucked over her family and what her husband had worked for to get ahead in the game. I didn't offer her granddaughter love. I merely offered her a semi-tolerable relationship. Lily averted her gaze to the window, blinking away tears.
She's been drifting in and out of consciousness. She's really old, baby. 90-something or whatever. She had a good life. She lived with us the entire time after my granddad died.
Any particular reason I'm just finding out about this now? I always asked Lily about Madeline and her parents. Always. 6 months ago, when Madeline was admitted to the hospital with chest pain, I'd rushed in and stayed by her side all night because Lily's parents were abroad and her sisters lived on the outskirts and couldn't make it. Of course, Lily had been too busy partying.
I thought if you knew the only thing to keep you with me other than Newsflash Corp was gone, you'd...
Lily wiped her tears quickly before they ruined her mascara.
She was your favorite. I didn't know how you'd react, and I didn't want to know either.
Is she still alive?
Not for long, baby. I'm sorry, but there's no way she'll make it to our wedding.
The cab came to a stop in front of her parents' Park Avenue building. I shoved my hand into my pocket, producing my wallet and plucking out a chunk of notes. I slapped the cash in the driver's hand and told him to wait under the building. Lily stared at me, a slow grin spreading on her face.
If I'd known that's what it takes to get you into my place...
Shut up, Lily. I need to say goodbye to Madeline. This is not about you. Half an hour later, I was back in the cab, my mood hitting an all-time low. Madeline wasn't awake. Lily's parents, while happy to see me, were also wondering where the fuck I'd been for the past few months. Things were tense and awkward. They no longer felt like the family I never had, and why would they? I hadn't bothered to pick up their calls in months. By marrying Lily, sticking it to my father, and finalizing the merger, I was not only ruining my own life, I was ruining theirs too. And that was something I'd yet to consider. I gave the driver a Brooklyn address I had no business visiting, and asked him to roll the windows down so I could breathe in unrecycled air. A little while later, we stopped in front of Judith's building. Her living room window was wide open, like I'd known it would be. Jude's entire personality was inviting. Her generosity and kindness said come in, and I wanted to stomp into her territory and conquer every inch of her life. I sat in the cab and stared into her window, realizing I was acting like a creep and not giving half a shit. The cheap yellow light bulb of her foyer flickered, and because she was living on the ground floor, I could see that there was a small table set for dinner with a salad bowl, pasta, and garlic bread. Basic, but I knew it would taste better than the bluefin tuna sushi I was going to have for dinner.
Sir?
The driver cleared his throat. I slapped some more money into his hand without taking note of how much it was. A few more minutes. I'm way past creeper and treading into restraining order territory.
Of course.
You should probably pick up the phone and fucking report it, man.
I would, in a heartbeat.
5 minutes later, Robert walked into the dining room, easing slowly into his chair. He still looked fragile and older than his years, but he had a smile on his face. Less than a minute later, Judith appeared wearing a blue and white Yankees hoodie and tiny high-waist shorts. Her legs were tan, muscular, and glorious. She was laughing and mounding pasta onto her dad's plate. He coughed and she stopped laughing, walked over to his seat and rubbed his back. He caught her hand in his, looked up. They shared a smile. His lips moved.
I'm okay, Jojo. Really, I'm fine.
She cracked two beers and poured them into tall glasses, her lips moving, smiling. She was singing. I looked away because I didn't expect to feel the way I did, like I wanted her and envied her and pitied her. Wanted her because she was tailor-made for me. Envied her because she had a real family, or whatever was left of it. And pitied her because I couldn't quite let go, and I didn't do love, only hate and anger and revenge. One thing was for sure. Judith Humphrey and Lily Davis weren't cut from the same cloth, and I wanted to wear only one of them. One girl disarmed me, the other fucked me up, and over. One girl was loyal, the other shallow and empty. One claimed she was mine, but it was the other I wanted to own.
Chapter 11. Jude. We need to talk. I stormed into Celian's office when the clock hit 9 a.m. Brianna, who had been waiting in an invisible line by his door to see him, had clutched her iPad to her chest and stared at me with sheer alarm when she saw me advance toward his office and walk in without knocking. Celian was already behind his desk, sipping his one of three morning coffees, chewing his mint gum, and flipping through the daily newspapers, not sparing me a look. He wore his indifference like chipped armor, a white knight with a very dark soul.
Disagree? But you're already here, so you might as well spit it out.
First of all, did you know Brianna is waiting for you outside? I threw a thumb behind my shoulder, cocking an eyebrow.
I did, and she can knock.
She's scared of you.
You'd be wise to be the same, he whiplashed, still not looking up to meet my gaze. Are you here to talk about Brianna, Miss Humphrey?
Damn him, he sounded like Harvey Specter on speed, only crueler and 10 times handsomer. If Celian met chivalry in a dark alley, he would beat it to death, then find its sister, Generosity, and kill her too. I came here to tell you I found out, and I'm pissed.
Explain, and save me the ambiguity.
Are you too precious for eye contact anymore? Is that now saved for the moments I'm writhing under you and you want to see me vulnerable? I couldn't believe the words had left my mouth. Shakily, too. I glanced back. Brianna wasn't in the hallway anymore. Phew. Celian dragged his gaze up slowly, his cobalt blue eyes extra frosty on this warm day.
Do what?
He highlighted every word. I know you paid my father's medical bill, all of it. You're not my sugar daddy, Celian. I appreciate your good intentions, but I don't need help. I'm not a damsel in distress. I don't need anyone to save me. I don't want you to pity me. I don't want you to look at me as anything less than an equal, and I don't want you to be engaged. In fact, I especially don't want you to be engaged and pay for my things. It makes me feel like the other woman. Those were all the things I wanted to say, but knew I never would. It wasn't anyone's fault but mine that I'd agreed to be put in this position, or that I still craved him like a junkie, even though he was a drug that could kill me. He leaned back in his seat, his index fingers tapping.
Do you have any way to prove it was me?
He asked. Was he kidding me? There were no other suspects. The money hadn't simply fallen from a tree straight into the wide black hole called my debt. Are you really going to play that card? I folded my arms over my chest. He shrugged.
Not many cards I can play. I'll take what I can get.
I laughed, despite still being furious. He was goofy and charming when he wanted to be. Unfortunately, most times he was content with being a jerk. Now I feel like I owe you, and I hate it.
Don't. I didn't pay your medical and student debt because I'm fucking you. I paid them to unfuck you.
You paid my student loan, too? My eyes were ready to pop out of their sockets and roll on the floor. I still stood by his open door, trying hard not to have a mental breakdown. It was flattering, but also infuriating. This assuming I needed him to save the day, that he had the power to make my problems go away like some kinky fairy godfather. He looked down, flipping another page of the newspaper in front of him.
You were writing a full scholarship and living at home. It was hardly a substantial amount.
For you, I gritted. Not a substantial amount for you.
Tuck your pride back in, sweetheart. You're coming off as a little ungrateful, and it's unflattering.
Screw you, Celian.
Please tell me that's an invitation.
I hate you. I yelled in his face, stomping, actually stomping, me, a grown woman. He looked up and raked his eyes over my body quietly. Our gazes halted on my chucks. Red. Anger. Passion. War.
Do you now?
He had no business butting into my life more than I had allowed him to, more than I had willingly shared with him. I didn't share this with anyone. There was a reason why I'd never told him about my debt or my family life, not even about Dad. Dad. My blood froze in my veins. No, there was no way. Still, I needed to ask just to make sure. Do you know about my father's situation? He got up from his chair, grabbing his peacoat and sliding into it.
I need another cup of coffee for this conversation. Walk with me, Chucks.
I followed behind him. His broad shoulders were big enough to carry the entire world. He gestured for me to get into the elevator before him, and the minute the doors closed behind us, I turned to him. You know about my dad, don't you? I didn't know why it upset me so much. Sure, Celion was rich, successful, and prevailing. But in my eyes, we were still on the same level, as crazy as it sounded. He now offered me his sympathy, but I rejected it, wanting to toss it back in his face. I wasn't ashamed of my father's illness. I just wished it was for me to decide when and where I told people about it, if I told them about it.
I do, he said tonelessly.
Please don't tell me. I cupped my mouth. Not that it would have made any difference. My father was going to proceed with the experimental treatment, even if I had to donate a functioning lung to make it happen. But I didn't want it to be true. Didn't want to know that that's where we were, Celion and I. A rookie Brooklyn reporter with a nice pair of tits, and a sugar daddy boss who was about to get married to someone else and had guilt bought his way to her affection. I was officially the mistress, silenced by shiny, pretty things. By money and a healthcare program and a good steady job, a role I'd never agreed to take. The power imbalance was now personal and degrading and real. I was indebted to a man I was sleeping with, no matter how we tried to spin it, a man who was taking more and more space in my life, conquering lands in my heart without claiming them, without civilizing them, without nurturing them. The elevator slid open, and I walked out first. I was desperate to put some distance between us so he wouldn't see how flustered I was, how embarrassment colored my cheeks, how I felt my whole body turning pink. I heard him groaning behind me. I looked down and realized I was wearing a conservative, pearl-colored sheath dress that was snug around my waistline and probably highlighted my butt. "Like what you see?" I gritted sarcastically.
"It would look better with my hand marks all over it." Are you going to stop running? Are you going to explain yourself?
I pushed the door to the building open, and we were on the busy sidewalk, facing each other and blocking the downtown human traffic by standing there like two statues. He ran his big palm over his face, and for the first time since I'd met him, looked somewhat affected. I shouldn't have felt so triumphant for being the one who'd put agitation there, but I was.
It's not like that.
Then tell me what it's like.
I didn't pay it because I wanted you happy or content or on your fucking knees.
Really? Did you know Jessica's mother has Alzheimer's? Did you help her out? And what about Brianna, your PA? Did you pay her student loan debt? Oh, let me guess. Elijah, who you actually talk to pretty often, also didn't get a fat bonus this year so he could help his parents with their remortgaged house.
How do you know all these things?
He frowned. They're my colleagues, my new friends, and I talk to them. I flung my arms in the air. Maybe you should do that sometime. Actually make an effort. Be nice. His jaw tensed and locked in anger, and I figured I had two choices. Either get out of there or slap him across the face, a treatment he'd earned fair and square. I chose the option that wouldn't land me in hot water with HR. I turned around and crossed the street toward the Duane Reade on the other side of the road. The light was green, but New York drivers were being, well, New York drivers. A purple taxi came to a halt, screeching 3 inches away from me and sputtering a cloud of black smoke. The scent of burned rubber filled my nostrils, and before I knew what was happening, I was on the ground, shielded by Celion's body. All of him, on top of me. On the hot, stony crosswalk. I squirmed against his hard body, bawling my fists and hitting his chest on instinct. I was angry, so angry, beyond reason, belief, and logic. Another girl might feel elated to be saved, both by a man's money and his own body. But it wasn't just my debt, or Dad and Celion lying to me. It was the fact that I had begun to truly care for him, knowing I could never have him. Not really. The heart is a lonely hunter, Jude. No, it's not, Mom. It's the prey, and Celion is digging his claws deep into it. Get off of me, I seethed. His nostrils flared, but he did as I said, offering me his hand after gliding back onto his feet. I took it, still disoriented from being thrown to the ground, by him. People gathered around us on the sidewalk watching. Celion sent a punch to the taxi's hood, denting it in the shape of his fist. I yelped. From this angle, it looked like he might have broken every bone in his hand. But if it hurt, he didn't let it show. His face was back to being scarily blank and emotionless.
Hey, man, what the hell?
The taxi driver stuck his head out of his window, waving an angry fist in our direction.
Hell is what I'm about to unleash on your ass. You had a red light and almost ran over my employee, so I pimped your ride. If you have a problem with that, you're welcome to take it up with the team of fucking lawyers who occupy an entire floor in my building.
The driver said nothing, tucking his head back into his taxi and cursing under his breath. Celion looked like he was about to explode, and I had to pull him into an alleyway between two buildings and plaster him against the wall, squeezing his shoulders. His breathing was hard and slow, like the mere act hurt him. "Are you okay?" I asked. He inhaled deeply through his nose, then shook his head.
"Are you?"
"Yes. He didn't hit me, Celion." The taxi wouldn't have run me over even without his help. I knew Celion had just had a knee-jerk reaction after what he'd been through with Camille, and I felt horrible for my lack of sensitivity. The light was green, so I'd just gone for it.
"Do yourself a favor and look left and right before you cross the fucking street," he hissed in annoyance, suddenly looking embarrassed and disturbed.
His armor clattered to the ground, and I saw him for what he was, raw and incredibly tormented over what had happened to his sister, broken by his relationships with his father and fiancé, lost in a sea of people who admired and looked up to him, but were always too scared to show him real love.
"You wanted to save my life."
I cupped his cheek, not knowing if I should, but not caring much either. He put his hand over mine and scanned me from under his thick lashes, his throat bobbing with a swallow. His pulse slowed under his tailored suit, and we were now breathing in sync. It was reckless to touch him anywhere but behind closed doors, but I couldn't help it. His eyes were crushed ice, beautiful, blue, and tarnished. He clasped my chin between his fingers and brought my mouth to his.
"Don't flatter yourself, sweetheart."
He cupped my breast over the fabric of my dress and squeezed, tonguing me ruthlessly without warning. My mouth fell open and accepted the invasion. I wrapped my arms around his neck, grinding myself against him, and knowing this was not enough, not even close to it. I wanted to get rid of our clothes, our underwear, our inhibitions. I wanted to strip down to the very last item on my body, then tell him all my secrets with every thrust and kiss and bite. And I wanted to do those things not because he'd saved me, twice, but on the contrary, because for the first time since I'd met him, I recognized that he needed to be saved. From himself. He disconnected from me. Holding my jaw between his fingers and staring me down with his usual air of privilege, thick and heavy, clouded by lust.
8 o'clock. A cab will be waiting downstairs. You will wear the same dress and no bra or panties. You will be mine for the evening. You will not talk back to me, just let me fuck you the way I want to. Not because I paid for your shit, but because we both need a distraction. For every sass you give me, I will slap your pussy. For every no I hear, I will deny you an orgasm. Am I clear?
I nodded, dropping my eyes to my shoes. I loved this part, being his in a deprived, sick, and tortured way.
Good. Now go get me a fucking lead.
Chapter 12. Celion. She did. She got me the mother of all leads.
The Vice President, Brendan Creston, did what?
Kate sprayed her coffee all over her iPad in the conference room. Judith Humphrey was an ambitious little chucks. She managed the workload of two people. Whenever anyone had a contact or a lead they didn't want to chase, whether they were too lazy, too busy, or simply unsure if it would result in a dead end, they threw it her way.
Brendan Creston leaked those compromising emails.
Jude nodded, typing away on her laptop.
Now people are saying the president knew and they were meant to be leaked. If it's true, it's a game changer.
How do we find out? Elijah scratched his head.
Grill the spokesperson.
Jude's eyes shone. I saw the way Elijah looked at her, and I didn't like it. It was the same way I did, like a jackpot he was eager to hit. Hot, smart, ambitious, and compassionate.